Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 175 of the Intercooler Podcast. Dan Prosser here, and it's a bit of a different episode, this one, because this was our first ever live podcast recording in front of an audience of 120 people or so at a fantastic venue, Henry's Car Barn, which is just a brilliant spot for a gathering like this, for a live podcast recording, also a storage facility not too far from Gaydon. So to Henry's Car Barn, thank you so much for making the venue available to us. We had another Henry as our special guest, TI contributor Henry Catchpole. So Andrew and I interviewed Henry in front of the live podcast audience, and we spoke about all sorts. The main topic was the future of fun with cars. So clearly there's an awful lot for us to get our teeth stuck into with that topic. None of this would have been possible without our sponsor, Footman James, the classic vehicles insurance specialist, celebrating its 40th year in 2023. Thank you so much to Footman James for making this whole event possible in the first place. You can find out more about Footman James and what they can do for you on the car insurance side at footmanjames.co.uk. Henry, Andrew and I were delighted to be sitting in front of a beautiful restoration by Singer Vehicle Design, the results of the Dynamics and Lightweighting Study, DLS, that gorgeous, gorgeous car that was the perfect backdrop, really, for the discussion that we were having. So again, thank you to Singer Vehicle Design for making that car available to us. Now, hopefully you enjoy listening to this. The full conversation was just over an hour and a half, so this is the first chunk of it. The second part of it was a Q&A session with the audience, and we will release that as a separate podcast episode in a couple of weeks, so you'll be able to hear that soon. So enjoy. We are going to do more of these events, so just stay tuned to the podcast, to our social channels, to the Intercooler app and website. We're going to announce details of the next one very soon. So if you couldn't make it to this first one, we hope to see you at the next one.
Welcome to the very first TI Live recorded podcast. Thank you all so much for being here. My name is Andrew Frankel. I'm one of the founders of TI. Sitting next to me is Dan Prosser, the other founder of TI. It started about 4 years ago. We can't agree on where or even when it was exactly, but Dan came up to me and said, "I've got this idea." We had a conversation and everything that happened since then as a result of that. We also have Mr. Henry Catchpole with us, who you will remember from his time as features editor of Evo and from all the amazing videos that are plastered all over the internet of you driving fast cars fast. And he's not the only members of the TI massive here this evening. So I'd just like to point out one or two others. I'm not even sure where they are, but Andrew English is in here somewhere. So, Andrew, motoring correspondent for The Telegraph for how long? 25 years, and a man who can write with equal erudition on the future of hydrogen fuel cells or his slightly curious love of spanners. We have, I can see Joanna Fidalgo here, our ace powertrain engineer, biker, K-car obsessive, who writes for us on everything from the Japanese drifting scene to how to fix the carburetor on your Spitfire. That's your supermarine Spitfire. Mel is here too. Where is Mel? Mel Nichols. To those of you of a certain age, and I'm certainly one of them, you won't need any introduction to Mel because he is the man who in the 1970s and the early 1980s as the editor of Car Magazine did more to transform the face of motoring journalism in this country and a world and around the world than anybody else. So welcome, Mel. It's very good to see you. And I think, finally, Colin Goodwin. Where's
he hiding?
Uncle Col. Here's our agony uncle. This is a man who thinks it's a good idea to respond to people's genuine requests for car advice by suggesting to them that all their problems would go away if they just bought themselves a Formula 5000 car. So that is us. I have a couple of thank yous to do. Firstly, thank you so much to everybody from Footman James, our classic car insurance partner, here this evening. Footman James have been in that market for 40 years this year. They run their coffee and chrome events all over the country. Hundreds of people come to share their mutual passion for cars, and there aren't really any other insurers who do that. Charlotte Mosley and her team are here this evening, so you can go and talk to them about what they can do for you. They've got all their literature out at the back, or you could just go onto their website, which I think is footmanjames.co.uk. Henry Warhurst, this is his place. It is entirely through his kindness that we are here. Henry's car barn is, I sadly, disgracefully, hadn't been here before today, and I've spent the day wandering around. It is amazing. There are clearly other places you can go to get your car stored, but if you want to go somewhere and have your car looked after with the same love, care, and affection that you'd like to lavish on it while you're at home, this is the place to be. So Henry is over there. He'd love to have a chat with you about anything that can be done. Final thanks, I guess, is to our subscribers, which is you lot. When we had the idea for this event, we thought, well, clearly the right thing to do is to give first dibs to the subscribers, and then we'll hand it over to the normal podcast audience, and then we'll sell them on to people who follow us on social media. We didn't have to do any of that because we sold out in less than 3 days. So thank you. I hope you think that that we are worth it, and I hope that you have a jolly good evening. What next? Oh, yes, about us, TI itself. We're doing fine, thank you. We're doing really rather well. We get, you know, many new subscribers coming to us every single day. But I mean, so I wouldn't really have to blow my trumpet. What I did want to say, if there is anything you think we should be doing or doing more of or doing better, please just come and talk to us and let us know. We always want to hear from you guys. You are some of the most engaged, connected audience that anybody could ever want to have. We're very grateful for that, but please, as I say, do come and talk to us. Yeah, and finally, a quick word about this evening. Shortly, I'm going to hand over Dan, and three of us are going to have a bit of a chat. It's loosely going to be themed around what we've called the future of fun. But we haven't scripted any of this, so we don't really know where the conversation's going to go. It's better that way. It really is. We've done lots of podcasts, and the less you think about it, the more you just get on with it, the better it seems to be. I don't know why it works that way, but it just does. And then after that, it's over to you guys. We're going to have a Q&A session. The wonderful Kate Solomons is out there somewhere with a microphone. Put your hand up. She will give you the microphone. Ask us anything. It can be about what we've talked about, or it could be about anything else. You can ask me what it's like to write off the first Evolution Integrale into the country. You can ask Henry what it was like to write off a Mitsubishi Evo 7 while on work experience for Autocar. Or you can ask Dan what it's like to park a Bentley on its side in a ditch. It's entirely up to you. So that'll happen after we've had a chat, which is going to start now. Hope you enjoy it.
Well, thank you, Andrew. And as he says, thank you to every one of you for turning up. We had no idea what to expect. We thought maybe we'd be flogging the last tickets on the door this evening. But they went in days. So thanks so much to all of you for coming along. Henry, to get us started.
Yes.
So I've been looking back at some of the stories you've written for us beautifully over the last 12 months or so. you had a high-speed passenger ride with an F1 driver in an Aston Martin Valkyrie AMR Pro. Mm-hmm. You then drove the Valkyrie for yourself. Mm-hmm. You've driven the McMurtry Spearling, that extraordinary little Batmobile thing. Mm-hmm. You've tested every resto mod under the sun. I just want you to pull out a highlight from the last 12 months.
Wow. It is extraordinary. When you sort of, because of, I suppose, what we all do, there's a temptation to always just be looking for the next thing, sort of, I suppose, purely in a sort of work capacity in terms of you've got to think what the next film's going to be so I get paid. But looking back on it, it is extraordinary. I think the McMurtry probably stands out, which I didn't think at one point, if somebody had said sort of the most extraordinary car would be an electric car, then I probably would have thought it was very strange indeed. But that car, the electric part of it is sort of incidental, I think. And just the performance that it delivers is
you,
so
can,
far.
Can you just try and, I know you wrote about it beautifully, Russ, but could you just try and tell us as much as you possibly can, because it must be literally indescribable, but what is it like when it leaves the line with all the downforce on?
How much power are we talking?
So it's 1,000 brake horsepower. Yeah. I think the
and 1,000 kilos of downforce?
So it's 2,000 kilos of downforce.
2,000 kilos
of downforce.
It's
full 23,000 RPM on the front. Yeah. So I'd actually drove it a few months before I drove it for the film, but it was in the wet, and it was at Millbrook, and we didn't film anything. And I did a standing start at that point, and it did 0 to 150 in 5 seconds in the wet. So you've got a 1,000 kilo car that's rear wheel drive trying to put 1,000 brake horsepower through those. It should not work.
Yeah.
You turn those fans on, you hear them spool up, and then you just release the brake.
Is it an enjoyable experience, or is it just horrible? I mean, I'd hate it.
So
I get scared in Taycans.
So when I did that, it was okay, because actually 0-60 was about 1.9 seconds, which is fine, as it turns out. Mm. It was actually quite smooth, and sort of you didn't get as much of that sort of that feeling that you get in a Taycan or a Tesla. When I did it in the dry for the film, and it was about half a second quicker than that, so it was about 1.4.
As a proportion, 60. That's enormous.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was really quite horrible. I mean, I've sort of said to people, I don't make noises and pull faces like that on film out of choice. Sort of, I don't go out of my way to.
I thought you were going to say out of bed.
Stupid.
Steady.
That's a whole other podcast. That sort of, you have to get another special guest.
Keep going.
That extra performance from it being in the dry was. I don't think I was prepared for that at all. I did two standing starts on the day. And you just the first one I did, I kind of almost didn't brake at the right point at all because I was so overcome by just clinging on.
Did it mess with your inner ear? Did you feel dizzy? Did you feel disoriented by it?
So the thing that we got wrong was when we were planning that film, we knew we had Myra and its massive great steering pad. And we thought, well, the sensible thing to do would be to show what the car's like with the fans off and then the fans on. And we had the idea of you've got the drone shot overhead and you have a big, you know, constant radius circle. So you can just, it's a very nice visual thing. And it'll be good for me because I can then build up to that limit.
Yeah.
And it shows, I think, the level of performance. Because in any other car, that would be absolutely fine. You'd think that's okay. I can just drive around like this and feel, is it pushing a bit? Is it going to oversteer a bit? The trouble is, when you turn the fans on and suddenly you're pulling 3G, and you're pulling 3G constantly in one direction, that's not very nice. Because by the time you've done one
bit,
you're just sort of melting into the side of the car. And it's really nice. Actually, doing the figure of eight was much better because it's there's peaks and troughs in terms of that G. But doing the big circle was a big mistake, and it was really quite unpleasant. And I just had to stop after a couple of laps of doing that. And I'm sort of always thought I'm relatively fit, but I was breathing heavily, and your arms are heavy, and it's really really difficult. Your mouth goes dry.
Yeah.
It was just bizarre.
And they're they're sort of productionising it, aren't they? They're building a few.
They are.
Selling them to punters. So are these going to be turning up at track days at the Bedford Autodrome? Going around in 30 seconds?
Yeah, I mean, it's So I think their idea for it, they're going to do the pure version is what they're calling it, because there still is only that one car at the moment, which is the Goodwood Hill record car. But there's all sorts of things that they know they can improve. I remember talking to them at the time.
By improve, you mean make it go even faster?
Yes, and there were things on that Goodwood run, for example. It got the record, but it has a 60 kilowatt hour battery in it, whereas the IDR that had the record before had like a 7 kilowatt hour battery in it. So they said, if we stripped out just to what we would need, we could go much faster. And obviously it stops at 150 miles an hour in terms of that's that particular one's top speed. And you could see by the time it got on the bridge at the Goodwood hill climb, it was at its VMAX, and he's just sitting there waiting for Malcolm, basically.
Wow.
So this is where the Pure will then take all this sort of stuff on, and they've got a better, bigger tyre and that sort of thing. And so, they reckon it's going to have another sort of 25% in terms of performance.
That's just outrageous. So I want to draw your attention to this beautiful car behind me. Mm. From Singer Vehicle Design, the results of the dynamics and lightweighting study. I just think it's gorgeous. If you haven't had a chance to have a proper look at this car, do so after this. I think you'll be astonished at the quality, the detail. It is a gorgeous thing. Mm. And it's a real trend, isn't it, at the moment, these reimagined iconic cars. You've driven plenty of them.
Yep.
Where do you stand on these things? I mean, I just want to see something more affordable. But I find that stuff like this, they're the cars that I'm sort of most excited by these days.
Yes, it's very tricky. Like you say, a lot of the films I've done this year have been on resto mods, and there seems to be more and more of them, and I love them. They're generally great fun, and they're always interesting. There's something different about each one. The big caveat you seemingly always have to put in with them is it costs...
Yeah, that's the problem,
money,
isn't it?
Which is very difficult. It's one of the reasons I really like... I drove the Alphaholics recently, their little Super R, the saloon, which I thought was just wonderful because it looks very standard and prim and proper, and yet it's as rorty as a GTAR. And
what does it cost?
That one, I think we insured it for £480,000. But the thing that makes me feel better about the Alphaholic stuff is the fact that they started their business doing the mail order parts. So that is obviously for a car that's gone back to bare metal, has a beautifully crafted interior and everything. Yeah. So I like the idea that you could go out, buy an old Alpha, and then you can cherry pick bits, and they will sell you all the bits off the shelf, which is not how a lot of people want to do it, but they see it as,
I just like these cars which look completely original. That have just, we know someone who's got an E-Type that's just been breathed on gently by Henry Pearman of Eagle E-Type. Yep. And you'd never know it from the outside, but I think it's got proper brakes, it's got the five-speed box, the suspension doesn't rattle, it won't overheat. And it's just, and that need not be hugely expensive. I've always wanted to do one with an original Lotus Elan, because that is such a superb car in theory, but we all know the reality is not without its issues. So just to get a Lotus Elan, maybe I might even put a bit of navigation and stuff like that in it. Well, and way to flip, just to make it usable. Because my theory is, and I've talked about this on the podcast and in various articles, that the amount of fun a car is how enjoyable it is to drive multiplied by the number of times you feel inclined to use it. And I think that if you knew you could go anywhere in your Elan and it wouldn't break down, and you could listen to something if you're sat on the motorway and you could charge your telephone, you'd just use it more often, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you? And that need not be a £400,000 car.
No. I think there's obviously these people are all trying to make a business out of it, aren't they? And if they can sell these cars to...
Absolutely.
And sell them for that much money, then that is the business model that's going to make them the most money. But I completely agree. And that's what I mean about the Alphaholics, the fact you can buy bits and bobs and just update it to make it kind of better. So it brings it down to nearer... Well, my level. So.
Halfway sensible numbers, yeah.
Exactly.
So you may have seen the gorgeous dark blue Ferrari 599 GTO poking its nose out of the shed down here. Hopefully you've also all read the story that we posted this morning, the triple test, including that car, with the F12 TDF and the 812 Competizione.
Yeah.
You wrote it,
yeah.
Magnificently, of course.
Well, of course.
It was.
You sound surprised.
Oh, a light sub. It was a memorable day. Just sort of sum it up a little bit for us. I think you said, actually, this is the one that you would choose to take for one last blast across that road.
It's just the one that... I was speaking to somebody earlier this evening, and I would say usually when you do these triple tests, you've actually almost certainly driven all three cars in isolation before, so you kind of know what you're going to get. I'd never driven a GTO, I'd never driven an 812 comp, and I'd only driven a TDF in near freezing conditions in Wales in January, which is just about the last place or conditions you'd ever want to drive. I've never been so pleased to get a car back in one piece. So I came to it without really knowing what to expect, which in our business is actually a very, very rare thing to do. And of the three cars, the GTO was just the one that you could just get into and drive fast straight away, because it has this beautiful, I'm going to say it, analog steering, which has lots and lots of feel, and it just gives you constant... The TDF is bonkers. On a track, no question of the three, I'd take the TDF. Mm-hmm. And because the 812 Competizione is so... It's so weirdly usable because it rides beautifully. You just wouldn't think it, would you?
No.
And actually, although it's more powerful even than the TDF, I think that's just because it revs higher. And all the power is concentrated right at the top end. I don't think at any given engine speed it's any more powerful. And so it's no more of an animal than the TDF. It's much more usable than the TDF. So it's clearly the best, most usable car there. But actually, the one that just captured my heart was the GTO, which was... And we're talking, aren't we, about the future of the cars, and these cars are such traditional cars.
Yeah.
The first ever Ferraris were, front engine, rear drive V12s, and that's what these things are. And there's a bit of me which thinks that, however much there is to look forward to, I don't want to see the back of those sorts of things, because we had a ball in those things, and there is a certain... I don't want to get too whatever about this, but there's almost a sort of romance to it, isn't there? Just hearing those engines and seeing those configurations and their Ferraris and everything else, and it was just a fantastic thing to do.
Yeah, and we'll keep doing those, won't we?
Oh, yeah.
We'll, as often as we can, we'll gather three, four very special cars together.
We have plans.
And photograph them and shoot videos on them. And if there's any test that you're dying to read that no one else...
People have been putting them in the comments, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Good. Well, we'll do them.
Yeah.
Get around to
let us know if you want to see fun combinations of cars. We'll see what we can do.
Well, talking of fun, we wanted to be a little bit grown up this evening, didn't we, and try and have a
not too much
worthwhile discussion about what the future of fun with cars looks like, because I think probably a lot of us here wonder, maybe we worry. Mm. But certainly it's changing, and having a passion for cars, it's changing a lot at the moment, maybe faster than it ever has done. And I actually think if you love cars, it can sometimes feel like this thing that you adore, that you have a passion for, is actually under attack. We know that the sale of new petrol and diesel cars will be banned in 2030, actually, whether or not they go through with it
Never gonna happen.
But certainly things are changing. And I wonder, both of you, do you worry about this? Do you think, goodness me, all the fun's over? Or is there other stuff that makes you feel confident and happy that we're going to be enjoying these things for a long while yet?
I think, part of what you said before about the cars I've tested this year, as so many of them have been resto mods and that sort of thing, and I've really noticed that, I don't know whether it's the product planning, obviously going towards 2030, and that they're just not producing or putting effort into ICE cars. There just aren't the number of launches this year, I found, of new cars, really, which is obviously concerning. Like you, I don't think it's going to happen in 2030. But we're also seeing things, obviously, like the synthetic fuels coming out, and there's a lot of hope with things like resto mods that actually I don't see it dying out at all. It'll be different.
That's the thing. It's going to be different.
Yeah.
And also, I think we have to think about, they're banning pure ICE cars in 2030. They have said that hybrids will go in 2035 without defining what their version of a hybrid is. They say it needs to be able to travel a significant distance with nothing coming out of the exhaust pipe, but they haven't said what significant is. So that is wildly open to interpretation. So I think that gets us to 2035, which means you can buy a car with an internal combustion engine in 2035, which means the infrastructure to support that will have to be around until 2045. So, you know, A, I think we have a lot of time still, and B, we'll find a way, because there are so many of us, there is such a big business out there. There's a thing called the Hobby Lobby, which people, you know, which is a very, very strong thing. And people don't, you know, like having their fun messed about with, and they tend to get quite noisy. And when people get noisy about anything, then, you know, whether you represent a majority or not, then, you know, quite often people sit up and listen. So I am generally optimistic. I think we have had a wonderful time, but I just don't buy that, it's all over. Mm. I also think that EVs, whatever our reservations about it. You know, if you think about the EV, the first production EV came out in 2009, the Nissan Leaf, which was, 14 years ago?
Yeah.
Think about 14 years on from the birth of the car, what you had in, whatever that was, about 1899. Well, it wouldn't have had air in its tyres, and it wouldn't have had a steering wheel. So we are still so, so young, that whole thing. And, you know, the technology will advance. They will get lighter. They will get smarter. They will become more entertaining. They will be more fun to drive. And it will, I think you're right, Henry. I think there will be, it will be a different kind of fun. Hmm. But, that, you know, fun cars will continue. We will all still be able to go out there for as long as we want to and enjoy driving cars. It may not be the same cars. It may not be in the same way. Horses. Do you remember horses? People don't. You know, that's the thing. You know, cars came along and people stopped using horses as public transport. Hmm. But people still enjoy riding horses. Mm. There are a number of them out there. You know, my only concern is that it becomes a thing that, you know, that you need to be quite wealthy to be able to enjoy. And I think that is a concern. And again, you know, I think the horse analogy works well there. Because, you know, you can do all sorts of things, you know, if you can afford to, you know, to have a horse and run it. And if you can't, then you can't. But, you know, I think people will find a way. I think just that is human nature. Is if it was humans want to do something, they'll find a way of doing it.
And there's always the Cuban model. You know, if we can't, if we're not excited by the cars that we can buy, we can keep the cars that we've got going. And there are plenty of those.
Yeah.
And as you say, update them, stick a screen in them so you can connect your phone and use them daily. I think there's going to be a little industry around that. And it's not going to be crazy six-figure cars. I think people are going to start taking real-world cars like 996 911s and E46 M3s and putting modern comms in them and refreshing them so you feel like you're driving a new modern car, but it's still an E46 M3. It's still got a blinding engine.
Yeah.
I feel quite sunny about it, quite optimistic about it all.
It's also, you know, there are people who will tell you that the internal combustion engine is not dead either. It just needs to be emissions free. So you can run it on synthetic fuel or you can run them on hydrogen. I once drove a BMW 7 Series. They had a fleet of these things running around Germany about 20 years ago. And it was a 7 Series and it had a switch there. And one way it was a petrol car and the other way it was hydrogen. And you literally just turned the switch and it just put a different fuel through the engine. It wasn't very efficient, and you know, storing the hydrogen at the sort of temperature that was required and under the sort of pressure that was required wasn't easy. But you know, that's what technology is for, isn't it? Mm. So I'm not even convinced that the internal combustion engine has had it, and that cars will just have to have manufactured noises and everything else, because I still think there's a good chance that in one way or another, they'll live on.
And do you think there's something interesting there as well in terms of actually the type of engine that might be there in the future? So we've obviously had this horsepower race, and there's this sense of, well, it's not going to keep going above and beyond in terms of performance, and maybe we're seeing, you know, the last naturally aspirated V12s out there, but we're going to see cars that are smaller, lighter, might not be as fast, but as we have all said at some point, fast is not the be-all and end-all.
No, it's so obviously the way to go. Mm. You won't find a car manufacturer do it. I can remember talking to one of the engineering guys at McLaren saying, you know, you make cars that are, by comparison to your rivals, they are lighter. And, you know, why don't you just focus on that and just cut the power and make the cars lighter? And he said, because we wouldn't sell any. Because ultimately, people need to know that whatever they buy has a higher 0 to 60 time and it's got this amount of power and that sort of thing. And I just really, really hope that in time, people begin to realise just how much better a lightweight car is. Just how much more fun it is.
Singing the praises of the Alpine. Sort of. I've been driving the A1.
Yeah, but they can't sell them.
No. But
that's the problem. In A110, it was, you know, it's the only 10-star car.
I had one of those.
You bought one.
You used to have one of those.
I had one of those.
Yes. Do you remember that?
I don't talk about it.
I remember now. You did have one of those once, didn't you?
A couple have turned up. It's trolling me. So thanks to both of you.
But I mean, that's why we are all... What are we? I don't know. I mean, are we dinosaurs? I don't know. We're the exceptions, aren't we? What we want is not what the market wants.
Seems that way.
What the market wants is a crossover SUV, something or other.
Seems that way.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I think the other thing that I reflect on is that there's strength in numbers. Yeah. And I look in front of me now and see how many people have turned up to watch and listen to us talk about cars.
And turned up in great cars as well.
Turned up in fantastic cars. And we see these temples.
Can I just ask, because I'll forget if I don't ask, what's the favourite car you've seen out there? Not the most expensive or the first, but what car do you just look at and go, Alfa SZ?
Can we have an arm in the air for the SZ, please? I was asking for the driver and lots of you.
unless we've got a whole fleet of them out there.
Like, wow, there were more than I thought.
Well, anyway, bravo to you for turning up in the SZ. Was that your answer?
It wasn't, actually, no.
What are you saying? Is it the black Clio 182?
Exactly. Which I had to park around the back. I got told it was kind of, you know...
It's gruffy.
Non grata, but there we go. No, it wasn't that. I partly because it brings back happy memories, the Aston out there, actually, the Vantage, the M430.
Gorgeous.
I saw it and thought, the more...
Yeah. Funny, and certain cars, you just see certain cars and you just think, oh, that's me.
Yeah.
Go on.
So, what, do you want my favourite car? I'm going to say the Alpine, both of them.
Of course.
But what I was going to say is that I feel quite optimistic about the future of all this, because I just think there's so much passion and enthusiasm out there. These places, these are temples to cars, places like this, Henry's Car Barn, and there are so many of them springing up around all over the place. And you look at the
none good, as good as this.
None as good as this. And you look at the Goodwood events, and the turnout there, and the enthusiasm, the level of passion at the Festival of Speed.
Were any of you at the Festival of Speed? It was rammed.
On
was
the Saturday,
on Thursday.
Yeah.
Thursday is the kind of like the build-up day, the sort of the quiet day.
It's busy.
Move.
Yeah.
And you can't just say, well, you can't do that anymore. Mm. You just can't. I mean, that's why I just think that we'll find a way.
We'll find a way.
Here's something else for future of fun motoring, which out there is a 911 Dakar.
Yeah.
And there's obviously also the Huracan Sturato as well.
Yes.
Most people know my affinity for taking cars off-road and liking a bit of gravel and stuff. Do you guys see that as something that there'll be more of, taking cars away from the public highway?
I think there will, because I think so much of this stuff, and I'm not saying this about anybody here or any of the cars that are out there, but generally speaking, people buy cars like that because they quite like what they think the image of themselves that the car projects. And we know that people like buying SUVs because that makes them look adventurous and outdoorsy, and I completely understand that. And if you can do that and also be in a 911, then I think that is immensely powerful. And I think we're going to see more and more of these things. And it'll be interesting to see whether they ever become core products or whether they are just sort of like, you know, it's all very sort of niche at the moment. Yeah. But all things are when they start. Mm. It's a really good question. I don't know.
I think maybe the UK is certainly England. It's probably the worst spot to have one of those cars. If you look at parts of continental Europe, parts of California, you know, other parts of the world where they have these huge open deserts.
E-grounds.
They have gravel tracks sprawling all over the place. Yeah. Then that must just be the most fun you can have. And no one's going to come and tick you off.
But do you think people are going to do that? Do you think, well, maybe somebody in this room who can answer this question, do you think people are going to go off-roading their Dakars?
Well, some will, and some will be a bit protective of them, which I totally understand.
Yeah. I think that people like to know their cars can do stuff without necessarily wanting to do that stuff themselves.
How far will your watch go down in the sea?
My watch, hang on, I think it'll go down to 1,100 metres.
Is that useful?
It has a helium escape valve. When I'm over a kilometre under the water, I find it very useful indeed. But it's an extremely good point. Yeah. People like having stuff that can do stuff that they don't necessarily want to do themselves. It's why people buy Range Rovers without having any intention of ever taking them off-road, and cars that do 200 miles an hour or cars that will go under 7 minutes around the Nürburgring.
It also feels a little bit like a sort of a backdoor way of introducing people to this idea that the next greatest car doesn't actually have to have more power or more grip. Sort of almost that thing by the back door.
Bring it on.
It's a way of saying, yeah, this is more enjoyable actually on the road as much as off, but they've just dressed the whole idea up in some tack on plastic wheel trims.
It is a Rover Streetwise evolved, isn't it?
You said it, not me. You said it, not me.
I take that back.
Too late.
I suspect, it might be, if things do really change with over the next 20, 30, 40 years, perhaps we'll get our kicks driving cars through organised events. Okay, so motorsport is the most obvious one.
Yeah.
But also getting together with mates and going for that drive.
Doing this.
Yeah.
People wouldn't have been doing this, well, I mean, to an extent, but, you know, sadly, we're not the only people who, you know, get together and have gatherings of, you know, of like-minded enthusiasts. And I think that we all sort of feel common cause. And maybe it's what you were saying earlier. Maybe we are feeling that, you know, the world, the tide is turning ever so slightly against us. And maybe we do feel the need to, you know, to get together and just, you know, share the love a bit. And, yeah, you'll find that you're absolutely right. People will just find other ways of doing it.
And I'm always conscious when we do these things that we can't just talk about how very well-heeled people are going to be having fun with cars in future. And I've done a couple of auto solos, right? And I rhapsodize about these things because they look like the most Mickey Mouse form of motorsport there is. And actually, it is the most accessible form of motorsport, probably, certainly in full-size cars. And I just love it because you probably spend 50 quid.
Yeah.
And you turn up and you're there for half a day on an old airfield, or it might be a grass field. It might be at Donington Park, they've got that, I think they call it the tarmac lake or the asphalt lake, just a huge concrete apron, tarmac apron. And they've put a few cones out. And you turn up and you just think, what is this? What a waste of time. Why am I here? And then you're sitting on the start line and you will be crapping yourself.
It's that feeling again, isn't
it? It's feeling, because there is something about knowing that a bloke has got a stopwatch and everyone's going to know what time you've done. And you're suddenly so nervous and you think, I don't know how to operate a car.
The nice thing is that you can bring it back even sort of lower than that with, you've got the Dakar and the Stratas. I remember my parents were very much into cars, and they got into cars through the MG Car Club. That's how they met. And so some of my early formative driving years were spent, actually before I probably had a license, bumping around fields somewhere in, I don't know, it was from my uncle's MG M-Type or something like that, sort of things on the face of it, pretty unsuited to bumping around fields, but it was a gymkhana, and it was literally stakes in the ground here, and generally you'd have a passenger with you, and the driver put a bucket over their head, and then the passenger would have to say sort of right or left or slow down a bit or speed off a bit and try not to bump into that tree.
Do in a car with a bucket over my head.
No, it's pretty unnerving. It's not great if the passenger says right, and then instead of saying okay, says right. Because that's
great. As incorrect.
Exactly. Yes. Mm. Yes. That's not good. And I got told off for that quite spectacularly. But we didn't hit the tree, so it was fine. But it's just good fun. Again, there's literally no sort of timing element or whatever. But it's so much fun. Mm. And potentially sort of.
When I was a lad, where we lived, we had a couple of fields at the back of the house, and my father was usually away working during the week. And he'd come back on a Friday, he'd fly back in on a Friday, and he'd go to whichever hire car desk had the smallest number of people there, and he'd go and he'd hire something, and he'd drive it home, and he'd go, off you go, boys. Yeah. And me and my brothers would just go round and round and round. We'd absolutely destroy these things for an entire weekend. On a Monday morning, he'd drive the wreck back to the hire car company, give them the keys back, and no one ever questioned it. We had lots of MG Midgets, Mark II Escorts. That just shows how old I am. And that was, it's got nothing to do with the future of fun, has it? But I just thought I'd.
You must have been on Mazda launches back in the day. There were a couple down on Kemble Airfield.
Yes, I flew a Hawker Hunter.
Yeah, there you go. And I did the extra 300. I think we've both written about it.
There you go.
When you came down from up yonder, and there was then this old Van Diemen chassis, which is just naked, no bodywork or anything, and it had knobbly tires on the front and slicks on the back, and a Honda Fireblade engine or something like that, and it was raggedy like, and they just put some cones around the infield, and there was some sort of rudimentary timing gear, and they could not get rid of the journalist. We would be there till
hypercars worth £1 million and had less fun than
you
had on that.
Yeah. It was just absolutely great. And you think of that's what you need, a field and basics of four wheels and a chassis.
A hard Mark II Escort.
And you'll have a great time.
Yeah.
So we've set aside plenty of time for the Q&A. We've got 10 more minutes of the three of us, but please start thinking about your questions. And when Kate starts offering the microphone around, do throw your arms in the air. And you can ask whatever question you want to humiliate Andrew or Henry, not me. But just to sort of wrap things up here for 10 minutes or so, car journalism, how has it changed, both of you, in the time that you've been doing? And what I want to ask is, do you miss the time when it was just a magazine and it was just printed product and it was every month or even every week and you were focused on that?
Can I be honest about this, given that we're not a magazine?
I think you should be.
Yeah, I miss it.
Yeah.
What I actually miss is the time. If you are a modern motoring journalist, everything has to happen yesterday. You know, you drive a car and you write your story and off it goes. There's no time for quiet consideration. There's usually no time for, even going somewhere. We used to go off and do this, that and the other, go abroad. And that's all gone. What's replaced it is this need to provide copy, to provide words as fast as you possibly can. And I think one of the things that I'm very proud about what we've done at TI is we do take long stories, we do give people long deadlines, and we do try to, Mel is here, and he mastered the art of that beautiful long form, considered intelligent journalism. And that's, that's what we're trying to do today. The world has changed so much with the advent of the internet and the advent of video and the advent of these strange things called podcasts, which I'm still trying to get my head around.
Yeah, same.
And some of it's good. I enjoy doing this, and I never thought that I would. I always thought that if I ever did anything well, it would just be, writing stories. But it's good to be challenged, and it's good to learn new stuff, even at my immense age. That's me. Henry. But you're so good at all this other stuff. In fact, you both are. You're both annoyingly good in front of a camera. You can do all this stuff. You are both thoroughly modern motoring journalists.
It's very kind of you to say so. I got into the industry like you. I thought I was going to write for you know, Evo was then, that's what I wanted to do, and that's what I thought I was going to do, just be writing, and somebody would take photographs, and that was it. The internet we had, evo.co.uk at the time or whatever that existed, but nobody really did anything, let alone wrote
it. I had a thing called a typewriter when I started, and we had to write Alessandro Nannini across the top of everything you wrote, because that was the width that you had to write with it. And so every story we ever wrote started with Alessandro Nannini across the top of it, because otherwise, when it came to be typeset, it wouldn't fit. Sorry.
It's all right. And filming cameras and stuff like that, no digital cameras. And it was, the video came along, and it was that period around about 2008 when the iPad came out and there was a financial crash and everybody was saying magazines are dead.
Yeah.
Thankfully, they're not. But it just felt, I had no idea about getting into doing the filming stuff. Top Gear was out there, but it was something so completely different. Yeah. It was just, there was, no chance really of doing that, even if you wanted to. But then YouTube came along and I held out against it for quite a long time and didn't really enjoy it to start with. But I think I just felt, if I want to have a career in this that's going to last, then I've kind of got to give this a go. And I still find the talking to camera bit quite awkward. I think I've learnt how to probably get the best out of myself. And I find it less awkward now doing the editing stuff, because I've spent a lot of my days, sadly, looking at myself on a screen, which is pretty horrible when you first do it. But actually, the strangest thing, I think, is hearing your own voice. That's what people find really uncomfortable. And because I've now done it an awful lot, I'm not freaked out by the sound of my own voice. I accept what it is. So that's made life easier. But I love the production of... So I love what we get at the end in terms of films. Yeah. But I have to say, if I go back now and do a written piece, it's for you guys or a magazine or something, and go on a photo shoot, it feels like a holiday.
Yes, it's lovely, isn't it?
It really genuinely
does. You talk to people like Clarkson, you talk to Chris Harris, what they actually love to do is to write. Mm. Clarkson, when he goes on holiday, he writes, because that's how he relaxes. And I know that Chris has been writing a book and he's really enjoyed it, because he just doesn't write that much anymore. No. And so I think we're very, very lucky to do what we do.
I still enjoy writing the voiceover and stuff I do, but it's very different. And the actual process of making the films is so time intensive as well. That's the sort of the thing that, if we shoot for the entire day, the videographer and editor will still want another few hours of footage to be able to use in the edit. Whereas, particularly with digital cameras now, and the fact they can chimp and look in the back of the camera and see that it's sharp, you can get through a photo shoot surprisingly quickly, because you have a set number of photos that you will use, and once you've reached that number, well, it's a good job, we might wait for a sunset, but that's it. Whereas the film, you just use everything and more. So it's a very different
It's changed experience. A lot.
Yeah,
changed a lot. So the next point in my notes: when car journalism goes wrong. I don't want to steal your thunder, because I'm sure some of you want to ask about the crashes we've had. But do you remember a while ago, a good year and a half ago, we recorded a podcast on when car journalism goes wrong? And lots of people commented on that and got in touch because they found it interesting. But without giving away any trade secrets, are we all chucking cars into ditches every single week?
Not every single week. I tend to like to have the odd week off.
Yeah.
Shit happens. It just does. If you do what we do, there are these requirements from editors who never have to do it themselves, that every photograph you have to be that sideways, and so stuff does happen, but actually I think it happens much more rarely than people probably suppose. Then again, there's an awful lot of stuff that happens which we never get to find out about, it because it's not in anybody's interest to publicise the fact. We've all done it. I don't know about the rest of the motoring journalists in this room. I can't imagine there are many who haven't been something at some stage.
I just made eye contact with Colin Goodwin there.
it happens.
If you spend long enough driving cars reasonably quickly on road or track, you're going to have a scrape at some time, aren't you?
Yeah, particularly when you have photographers who go, go on, just one more run. That's that is, if you're a do what we do, and you're trying to do silly cornering shots in front of a camera. When the photographer says, just one more run, what they mean is as many more runs as I want until I've got the photograph. And because you know this, you try to think, well, okay, I'm going to do this in one, so I'm going to give them the biggest slide, and it's going to be smoking, it's going to be this, that, and the other. And that's when it goes wrong. I know this from bitter experience, because that went wrong for me in a GT2 RS in 2010.
Did it bite?
Yeah, it bit properly. Yeah, I mean, I can remember being literally like this and thinking to myself, there was no more lockdown, thinking, this will be good enough for him. And then I thought, and I can remember thinking to myself, it's not coming back.
Yeah.
And it kept going. And it was one of those really weird accidents, because we were on some airfield somewhere in Germany, and there was this huge mound of earth which I was heading for. And I can remember thinking to myself, one of the three things is going to happen here. I'm either going to miss it, whoopee, or I'm going to hit it head on, which, God help me, or I might just clip it. And that's what I did. And so I sort of like glanced off the side of it, and the only reason the car was immobilized is it popped one of the radiators at the front. It was back doing its thing about 3 hours later. And although there is some footage, because they had a camera on me in the car, of me saying every swear word under the sun, actually, when I think about it, I think how bad it could have been. But yeah.
You got off.
But that's not just when things go wrong, that's why things go wrong.
Yeah.
And it's all photographers' fault.
Should we tell a story that's not actually ever been told before?
You want to tell it?
We were in an accident together.
You want to tell it?
Yeah.
Who was driving? Can we just get this right? Do you want to tell it?
Yeah. Go on then. Well, you should probably tell it. You had a bit of...
So we were doing a group test for the magazine we were working on. We can call it...
The greatest ever group test.
The gravel group test, wasn't it? This was with Evo.
Yeah.
And you'd done so well. You'd gathered together some amazing cars, rally cars. You had a modern WRC...
Probably my best blag ever.
Fiesta, yeah.
Convincing M Sport to send down a full Fiesta WRC car.
You had a Tuthill 911. Yeah. You had...
Not what I crashed. Neither was a WRC car.
No. Aerial Nomad.
Didn't crash that either.
And Ebola.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Polaris I didn't crash.
No, I didn't crash that.
But
yeah, we had a rally. It was
Walters Arena.
Yeah. So a proper rally venue in South Wales.
Yeah.
Perfect spot for it. And you were howling around in this bowler all day, and I was just watching it, seeing it lean over, thinking, that's going
to
tip over. And it would get through the corner.
Okay. Roll bars on it, didn't it?
And it would come back, and I think, that's going to tip over. And it would just come back. And then you gave me a ride at the end of the day.
Yep. And it didn't come back.
It tipped over.
It tipped over. And it's a big slab-sided thing. Mm. So it went up like this on two wheels, slapped down on its side, and then onto its roof.
Quite graceful in a way, wasn't it?
No.
And Dan, presumably you're quite used to parking things on their sides by then.
I had some experience. Yeah. But this was on the roof. That's well beyond the side.
Oh, okay.
We had to do the harnesses unclip and drop down into the kind of... Yeah.
Fall into the roof, into the ceiling of the car.
Yeah.
Any delicate bruising? Yeah, I had this crotch strap. I did.
Yeah, I have children now, so it's fine. So do you.
Yes.
Can't do that much damage.
But you've got a fairly clean record, haven't you?
Relatively clean, yeah. Yeah, it was. I think before I started, that's sort of when it all went really wrong, and therefore I hate getting things wrong. Not just driving wise. I'm one of those people. I don't like getting things wrong, so I hate even spinning a car, even if it's you're not going to hit anything. I don't like it. Maybe it's the rally driver in me as well, because if it goes wrong, then you generally hit a tree or something like that. Yeah. Really not good. I've kept my nose fairly clean over the years.
And another one of our contributors, Ben Oliver, did send us a note before we started here with a question for you.
Excellent.
So maybe this is a good way to start the Q&A.
Oh.
And he, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but he said, given that you started your car journalism career in not particularly auspicious ways while on work experience with Autocar, has your recovery from that point to here, 20-odd years later, is that the most spectacular car journalism career recovery?
It must be pretty remarkable. It's not a way I would recommend anyone else gets into car journalism. For those of you who don't know, I was on work experience with Autocar whilst I was at university. And I had a pretty dull week, to be perfectly honest. I sat down and I wrote some nibs, but I was happy because I was in a car magazine. It was, seeing behind the scenes and all that. It was fantastic. Towards the end of the week, they were going to do their 0 to 100 to 0 test up at Bruntingthorpe. And Chris Chilton was there, and he said, you know, you should come along too, so you can see what the testing's all about. And I thought, this is fantastic. And we went in his Mitsubishi Evo Extreme 7 Extreme long-termer. And I remember we pulled into a petrol station because those things had tiny tanks. And he said, oh, if you need to fill this up later, then it take. And I didn't hear the rest of the sentence because he clearly thought that I was going to drive this thing. And at that point, the most powerful thing I'd driven was my Mini Cooper. And long short of it is, I got into this thing. He got into some Digitec Mercedes CL that he picked from Stoke Poges. We went up the M1. The speedo was massively overreading, so I lost him. And I just remember every time this thing came on boost, I thought I was going to crash it anyway. So I was enormously relieved when I got to the Brunningthorpe gates and parked it up and thought, that is it. I've delivered it. This is fine. I'm happy. And went off. And we went and did some laps and passenger seats of stuff with them all going incredibly sideways. And then all we had to do was deliver the cars from the gate to the bottom of the big long runway, which is the sort of the muster point. And it was wet, and I remember thinking that there's standing water there, so be very careful of that. And then the words of Chris Chilton rang in my ears when I'd asked him, sort of, how do you learn to do all this fabulous sideways stuff? And he said, well, you practice on a place like this where there's nothing to hit. And it turns out that if you're going fast enough, there is always something to hit. And I remember coming over this left-hander onto sort of the access road to the main straight, and it's a sort of cresting left-hander. And I thought, come on, Henry, you've got to do this. So just push it a little bit through here. So I pushed it over there and came just over the crest, and I could feel the thing understeering. So I thought, I'll lift off. That's a good idea. And it wasn't a good idea at all because I was going backwards before I knew it. And then we hit the grass, and so we seemed to speed up. And then we went into the trees. And I remember sort of coming to sort of thinking and panicking, thinking perhaps if they hadn't seen it, I can reverse it out of here and then sort of wipe it off or something. And I tried to start it, and my foot wasn't on the clutch, so the alarm went off. And as I was trying to start it for the next time, I looked across to my left, and the passenger side, there was just this big V where it had wrapped itself around a tree. And I was enormously lucky, fairly obviously, because it would be on my side, it would have been not
wrapped around a tree
at all. Exactly. Yeah. And I just, I can clear as day just remember getting out of the car and walking across the wet grass and seeing the dew, you know, making my shoes wet, and just and Chris Chilton coming around the corner in E36 M3 and just clearly looking across, seeing me walking across the grass, and just, I remember seeing the car just dive as he hauled on the brakes and then asked what had happened. And yeah, I wanted the ground to swallow me up, and I had spent the entire day there just apologising to everybody, including Peter Robinson, who's obviously yeah, they all warmed up eventually. He told me how he'd crashed a Diablo and put it on the cover, so yeah.
So I mean, presumably at that point you just thought a career in car journalism was a no-go.
Oh no, I was completely sort of, yes, I thought that, yeah. was it. But I, yeah, it was about a year or so later that I then rocked up at Evo, and I confessed up to them straight away, yeah, because I thought the industry is so small, they're going to know anyway. Yeah. Yeah, thankfully they hadn't seen it, so it was,
brilliant.
I then nearly discovered later that I nearly didn't make it through sort of 6 months at Evo because they all thought I was much too slow in a car. Because obviously the last thing I wanted to do was go and wrap another car around, because that really would have been curtains. I realised that was very bad, so I just thought I'll just deliver everything there and
drive really slowly.
Yeah, basically.
Very sensible thing to do.
Same to me, and they just thought I couldn't drive quickly. So.
Wow.
There we go.
And that was it. So after that, we move straight into the Q&A. As I said at the start of this episode, you'll be able to hear that Q&A in full in a couple of weeks. For now, thank you so much for listening, and please stay tuned to the Intercooler podcast.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.